This is Eastman's Elevated Podcast. I have on great guests that are really knowledgeable, consistently successful. We're able to dive deep down the rabbit holes of these different subject matters of shooting, of physical fitness, of mental toughness and drive. All the different skills that make up a complete hunter that you can become.
Here's your host, Brian Barney.
Hey, what's happening, guys? Got a brand new Eastman's Elevated for you. So on today's podcast, I have on Sean Melland. So this is the first time I've got a chance to meet Sean. He's on the cover of our EBJ that's coming out. So he came down to the house. We recorded a podcast. I was just so impressed and inspired by this guy's drive. Like, he's an elk hunter through and through. So that's what he loves to hunt and what he focuses all his energy on. He prepares tirelessly for elk season, spends a ton of time scouting and preparing, and then a ton of time on the hunt. And man, it goes to show, like, his success that he's had. He's killed some giant bulls. Like I say, I was really impressed and inspired by the podcast. Really enjoyed it. I think you guys will enjoy it too, and we'll get right into it. I just want to thank a couple sponsors. So I want to thank Eberle Stock. I've been using Eberle Stock for the last few years, and they build a great durable pack that packs the weight right. They have different packs for all different preferences. Like, I know the guys at the office really like the mainframe with the Vapor series. You can get different size bags. It comes in at a minimal weight. I really like their new Kite 4800. I've been using that for expedition. Really lightweight internal frame. I use their Kite Day Pack for day hunting. It just cinches really tight to my back, and I can day hunt with it on and then also carry weight out. I also use their Destroyer Pack. I'll use that for expedition, and also their little Big Top. They have a great price point as well. So you can afford to get a pack that is going to get you into the backcountry and pack that elk or mule deer out. So check those guys out over at Eberle Stock. I also want to thank Kryptek. So Kryptek has this awesome camo pattern that I think gives me a real advantage while hunting the West. The Obscura Transitional just blends in to all different environments, and I feel like animals are really looking through me with this pattern. So I really enjoy using this pattern out west. They have technical mountaineering gear. I have probably the best system I've ever had put together, all the way from early season to mid season to late season, to keep me safe, keep me comfortable, keep me out there longer. And it's definitely played a major role in my success. So if you're in the market for some new camo, some new technical hunting gear, make sure to check them out over at Kryptek. I also want to thank Onyx. Onyx has really changed the way that I hunt and scout. I can use it on my desktop, and all my pins, all my scouting and my work then transfers over to my phone. I can catch maps on my phone, so even though I don't have service, my GPS, my maps will still work when I'm on the hunt. I love scouting real time to be able to look at topography, to be able to look at aerial imagery, and also a hybrid of both systems. I can really scout on the fly. So if I find animals in a certain facing hillside or certain exposure, I can look inside the unit for that exposure, find similar country, and then go find critters in that type of country. So really helps out me in scouting and hunting. I also like their tracks to be able to track my mileage, elevation, things of that nature. So if you're not a member, make sure to check them out. They do all 50 states. They do Canada now. It's just a tool that I use all the time for hunting mule deer and elk and such. So check them out over at Onyx. I also want to thank Black Ovis. Black Ovis is an internet retail shop, has absolutely everything you need for your next hunt. They carry all the top name brands as well as their own name brand. So check those guys out. They've got a knowledgeable staff, and you can save 10% on your order with the promo code ELEVATED10. So thanks to those guys for their support of the podcast and all our sponsors. We sure appreciate it. Thanks to Eastman's for their support. You can check out the magazines. I've got a new article in there about executing on animals. Sean Mellon, that's on the podcast today, has our cover. And he talks about, well, I haven't read the article yet, but I can't wait to see it. And he talks about these bowls that he's harvested like he does on the podcast, and kind of some of his secrets to success. And you can see some pictures of some giant bowls. So I love reading our subscriber stories and also our pro staff stories in there. And you can check out our MRS and also our Tag Hub, which is our internet resource tool. Helps you learn these different units for different states. You can look at statistics, harvest statistics, how many six-point bulls, four-point bucks, like any of the information that these state agencies put out, we're able to compile into a graph format that you can look at. It also has a mapping system with it, so you can check that out. That's over at Eastman's Tag Hub. Check out our internet TV show, Beyond the Grid. Was able to see one of my late season mule deer hunts all edited up. I'm really proud of the edit and the footage that I captured there. So that'll be coming out this season on Beyond the Grid, which we'll start releasing this summer. But you can look over all last season's videos, including my BC goat hunt is on there. What other hunt did I have on there? I'm sure I had like a mule deer, maybe an early season mule deer hunt. But yeah, there's a couple of mine on there, and even past seasons, you can check out some of those. So, thanks to Eastman's for all their support. And, with that, I don't want to blabber on too much. I want to get into this podcast. It's a great one with Sean Mellon. I'm your host, Brian Barney, Eastman's Elevated. Here we go.
Just swung for the fences on all those. Really just tried to go, you know, super giant, mega giant or nothing on those tags. And, you know, ended up with nothing on all of them, but had some pretty incredible hunts in those states as well. And just, you know, the way the game is when you're hunting super super giants, it's tough to kill them. So you're not going to get them all the time. So have definitely eaten a few tags, but that's part of the deal.
Man, dude, that's just absolutely incredible. Like that many bulls over 375, and it takes a lot of inches to make 375. That is such a giant. Like, yeah. The benchmark for me has always been a 350 plus bull. Like, mm-hmm. when I get those bulls in my hands, I'm just in awe. And 375 or plus is on another level. And the one that was going to be on the cover, the 6x7, didn't you say it went 390?
7x8. Actually, he was 394 and 6/8.
Oh my gosh.
Yep. It's actually funny that the one that's on the cover is a straight six, and he's 394 and 6/8.
Oh.
And the one that, like, the story culminates with is also 394 and 6/8 as a 7x8. They're built totally different, but both giant, but different builds, but both awesome bulls.
So. Oh, that is incredible.
Yeah.
Like a big typical that goes that big
yeah.
is something else. I know. Just the mass and the way it carries its mass throughout all its tines. Like, I'd love to hold that bull. So you're in Bozeman.
He's super heavy, yeah.
Yeah, I got to see that bull in person one of these days.
His tine mass is like, it's one of my favorite things about him. Like, when they carry that through all the way through every single tine, they're just, I mean, piped. It's... Mm. Yeah, he was special, and he was actually the smaller. I was actually hunting a bigger bull when I killed him, and he had kicked him out of the herd, and he ended up being the one that I killed. So it was just pretty crazy hunt in general. But
like, bulls always look bigger on the head too. Like, I think a lot of guys see a 330 bull, and it's just standard that 20 inches gets added to bulls that people see, you know. And so, you know, over the years, like, I've really tried to be good about measuring bulls that I kill, measuring sheds that I find, bulls that I see to try to get a gauge. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine what a 390 looks like on the head. Like, I'm sure I've chased a couple of those bulls, but they're fairly rare, and there was two when you were hunting them.
Yeah, there was one that was way over 400.
Really?
And they're just built so different. They're when they have just the giant, like, propane tank bodies, and the antlers still dwarf the bodies. I mean, they just look like a completely different creature. There's a level, like, you know, kind of that 350 benchmark, mm-hmm. to your point. It's pretty noticeable when you see a bull that's kind of above that 350 mark. You kind of notice right away. Mm-hmm. But somewhere around, like, independent on how they're built, but somewhere around, like, the 380s up to maybe 390s plus, there's a whole nother level where mm-hmm. when you see them, you're just kind of like, holy crap, like, something's different, obviously different about them. And it's an immediate, like, and I've seen a ton of bulls and looked at a ton of big bulls, you know, in my life. And so you kind of, you get this, you know, this collective idea of what you're looking for. And when something outside of that happens, it's really noticeable. So yeah, they look pretty awesome.
So like the body size, right? That's such a giveaway on those giant bulls. Yeah, like you're so saying, huge. Just a horse of they're a body so on those huge. Things, right?
Yeah.
That's incredible, man. So like through finding these bulls, like, you know, I feel like eating those tags, as you said, like when you're chasing giants, like you're going to eat some tags along the way. But seven out of 8 years is incredible on bulls of that size and that caliber. So like just getting to meet you and getting to talk to you, it's like no secret why you're killing these things. Like you're putting absolutely everything into it. Like your life revolves around chasing these bulls, right? Like the last 10 years or how long have you been chasing bulls for?
Yeah, really. We moved out to Montana about 10 years. This will be our 10th year here. The first year, and that was like basically the mission when we moved out here. My wife's from Montana originally. We came out here from North Dakota, kind of after my football career ended, and was trying to just figure out what the heck to do with my life and with my energy and my passion. And so when we came out here, I mean, the intention for me was to, like, I wanted to go kill the biggest bulls in the world. Like, that was the plan. Mm-hmm. So,
man, you almost have to visualize it before you can accomplish it, right? It's like one thing to want to kill the biggest bulls, but to really set your sights on it and go, yes, I want to kill the bulls that are over 350, the ones that are over 370. Like, you had that plan from the start.
Yeah, absolutely. And I kind of have like a, I have a whole, it's a whole process for me mentally, like, the visualization piece then leads to the work, which then leads to belief, which then leads to achievement. So it's visualize, work, believe, achieve, right? It's a loop. So you have this vision, like my vision, oddly enough, like for whatever reason, I decided like 380 was the number. Mm-hmm. Having never hunted elk before, when we came out here, my goal was to kill 380. So that was the vision. So I wanted the first bull, and like that was kind of what I wanted my benchmark to be. So I had a vision of what that was. And I started looking at all the different guys that were killing bulls like that and started doing all the research and started doing all the work to figure out, first of all, how to find those things. And then what does it take to kill them? So I had the vision and then started doing the work to really figure out, you know, what does it really take to kill a bull like that? And as you start putting the work in, you start learning, right? And you start getting better. And as you start learning more and getting better more, you start to believe a little bit that maybe you could actually do this. So you have the vision, you start doing the work, and as you start improving, the belief starts to trickle in a little bit. And then, lo and behold, eventually you actually get eyes on one, like the first big one that you spot, and you're like, okay, like I did it. I found a big live giant bull. Like I did it. Now I got to figure out how to kill him. And so like that, you really start believing a little more, and then you take that belief and you loop back to the work. And what happens when you found that big bull? What do you think happens to your work? Like you start working harder, right? So you get a little bit more belief and then you start working a little harder. And then the harder you work, the better you get, and the more you learn, and the better you get, and the more you believe and the more confident you get. And pretty soon you find yourself standing over the top of one and you've achieved. And then once you achieve it, then your belief and your confidence really goes nuclear, and then you have a whole new vision. So it's this looping process that I have in my mind where it's always a vision that's followed by work, that's followed by some belief, and then it ends with achievement, but it's a continuous loop, so none of it ever really stops. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of my mental process about how I go about doing what I do.
Man, it's amazing. It like feeds itself.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when you talk about the work, you know, mm-hmm. it's so to kill big critters mm-hmm. is so multifaceted. Like it takes such this wide variety of skills. Like, and so it sounds like when you started the process, like it was trying to gain the knowledge of how to find those ones, where they come from, like really like diving into the research, into the books, diving into where these bulls come from. And also, your skill set as a hunter, like just developing your instincts of hunting these things and having close calls and knowing what moves to make. And then, you know, your physical fitness, and then, you know, also your shooting prowess, and not just like your ability to shoot on targets, but then you have to be able to transition that into shooting on a giant bull and keeping it all together. Like, it's so multifaceted, this goal you had that you set out. So, like, I'd have to imagine, like, a lot of this performance, like you had to achieve in football is kind of like what taught you like how to do this, right? And then you're just bringing it to your bow hunting. Am I right about that?
Yeah, that's pretty accurate. Yeah, so being a athlete really taught me how to work and kind of develop that process of work and belief and achievement. And you know, to start where I started, you know, growing up in a small town in North Dakota where, like, you know, nobody grows up to be a professional athlete, and then, you know, not getting any scholarship offers, going to college except for one school, NAIA school, that ended up going to Division II, the only school that offered me. That had never had a professional football player come out of their college before. Going from there to, you know, finally reaching the NFL, and then, you know, eventually getting bounced from there, and then having to start over again. But that process, like traveling that road to get there as an athlete, you know, I had to become incredibly resilient, and I had to have a lot of belief, and I had to just work really hard. So I created a lot of my mental process just through that work. And so when football was over, and, you know, really was looking for something to sink my teeth into, and I had grown up bow hunting, you know, grew up in Western North Dakota. Awesome. Just, you know, hunting the river bottoms with my dad and my brother. And you know, we lived in a really small town and a really, sparsely populated area, a really good spot and stock mule deer hunting. And we had like terrible bows. So I bow hunted ever since, you know, I was 10 years old. So I had that background and I loved it, but I never really got to do it a lot because football's in the fall, you know? So my whole playing career, it's football, and you didn't get a lot of chances to go bow hunt. And so once that was all over and you kind of, you know, make this pivot into, trying to become a bow hunter and hunting elk out here, it was like this whole new, you know, season that opened up for me. And I just went back to the work, you know, the same work and the same process that made me successful as an athlete. You know, how can I take and convert that into success as a bow hunter? And I think as you do those things and as you have success, you kind of learn that work is really the root of all your success, no matter what it is, whether it's an athlete or bow hunting or business or, you know, whatever. It's just, it's all rooted in the work. So
once you find the path to success, you can apply it to different things in life, right? It's like, whether that's football to bow hunting, or, you know, me, whether it's business and bow hunting and fly fishing, like you find the path to success, and then all of a sudden, like, you can achieve it. Like, you can work to get there. And it, like, a huge part of it is like that mental side, that your mental process that you're talking about. Like, you have to be able to envision it. And then, like you say, as you start to work and start to see success, like, I always thought when I started, you know, to try to kill a big bull, like first I had to find him consistently, right? I had to, you know, and my goal was less than yours, but it was still like, to kill a 320 bull, like, I've got to see a handful of those in a season and have chances at them. Or to kill a 350 bull, I've got to be able to find that bull. But then once you find them, you're like, oh, the process is working. Like, now I'm finding these bulls. Now I just need to make good on my opportunities when I get them. But man, that's incredible. Like, the to find those bulls on easy to draw or general season tags is incredible. So
that was the hardest part, honestly. Yeah. I mean, that was like the biggest hurdle for me. I mean, never hunted elk before. So I grew up bow hunting, but so I had the background of bow hunting and, you know, stalking antelope and stalking mule deer and stuff and out in the prairies in North Dakota. So like that would turn out to be really beneficial later on in elk hunting.
Yes.
But I had to completely learn elk. I had to learn their behaviors and, you know, the biology. I had to learn where they're all at, what's the criteria for a giant to exist. Like, I had to learn all that. And so that was cool. Like, it really gave me a lot, like, mentally, like, I needed that. I needed something to, like, really, really kind of sink my teeth into. And so that was, that was awesome. Just that was the biggest part. Like, you know, physically I was good and I was training hard. Mm-hmm. I could shoot a bow. Still needed, you know, you always need to kind of sharpen that edge as an archer, always. So there's always room for improvement there. But like the biggest thing was finding them and then figuring out how to hunt them. You know, it's like you can find big bulls sometimes, but it's like, are they in a dry area? Are they on private land? Like there's all these little folds to it, and it's to figure out how those puzzle pieces kind of all fit together. And is there a possibility that there's going to be an opportunity to kill this bull at some point during the 6-week archery season? If the answer is yes, then I need to figure out, you know, when and where that's going to be and put myself there and be ready to make the opportunity count. And so that's kind of been like one of the biggest, like, first, you know, things that I had to do when we moved out here. And, you know, living in Bozeman, you could see, you know, similar to here, you can look around and you see, you know, 7 mountain ranges all around you. And, you know, you want to put a boot track on every one of them. And not just around here, but like this whole state. And just because of my work, like I do a lot of traveling in Montana and Wyoming and out to North Dakota. So I cover a lot of ground and see a lot of country. And it's like, man, I wanted to glass every vantage point in Montana and, you know, and just figure it all out and see how many big bulls I could catalog and then go, you know, work out from there and start hunting them and finding ways to kill them. So, and it's still, I mean, yeah, so I've been doing it for about a decade now. And I imagine that I don't think there's any way you could ever hunt it all, you know? So like, that's the beautiful thing about it. It's like, it's pretty much never ending.
There is yeah, it's like same thing, exploring for 20 years. And it's like, I'm still finding new places.
How many places you have?
Yeah. Like,
so Montana changed their draw system a little bit in the last year. So it's a little different now. And, you know, if you put in for a quota tag, like maybe you think you should get it, but who knows, if everybody piles on that one, you might not get it that year. So you have to have backup plans. And yeah, so I have like my primary plans where like, here's my plans and where I'm going to scout and where I want to hunt. If I get the tag I want to get, but if I don't, then I have all these other hunts I want to do. And it's like, pretty grateful to live in a place that offers that many opportunities.
Yeah. And it is just great that those opportunities exist. And us men, we need a place for our passion. So it's good when we, you know, and passion is something that you love with every fiber of your being, that you think about every day and working towards your goals. And like, we're the lucky ones that have found that for sure. But it's just so incredible. And I only smile because it's like you're at such an elite level in such a short amount of time, where a lot of us guys have been hunting bulls for 20 years and haven't achieved even a tenth of what you have for that caliber of bull. So it's just incredible. So they did change their structure a bit. So now, yeah, it's pretty wild. You have to have your primary plan. And then if you draw that tag, then you can't hunt the other general areas.
That's right.
So even if you scouted a big bull on the general area, like right now we have our elk tags in waiting for the draw.
Yeah.
But if you found a big bull on a general tag, you're just going to have to save them for another year if you draw your primary.
Which is good.
Yeah, it is good.
I mean, you should be doing that.
Yeah, okay.
You know, be prepared, right? Like, mm-hmm. You should totally be doing that. I mean, if you're not finding ways to have backup plans for your backup plans, like you need to be prepared for when that happens. Mm-hmm. Like, I am. Like, when that happens, it will happen. It actually happened to me 1 year already that I had to rely on the alternative plan, and luckily I was prepared for it because I had already put that work in. So
it's incredible. So when you talk about that work, like a lot of your work is done, you're hunting those bulls all year long. It's not just during hunting season. Like, you're looking for them constantly. And it sounds like, you know, you talked about vantage points. So you're living and dying behind your glass. You're looking at a lot of different mountain ranges, a lot of different vantage points, and you're trying to find that giant, exceptional bull. And then you're trying to figure out where that bull will be come September, or come,
that's right,
you know, the early part of the rut, the late part of the rut, where you can intersect this bull,
yep,
and somehow have an encounter with him, it sounds like.
Yeah, and I mean, that's like one of the most fun parts. Like, it's this always evolving like mystery that you have to solve. It's these puzzle pieces that you have to put together. And, you know, understanding big bull behavior and understanding like they're going to do certain things at certain times, and like when you can put all those little pieces together, and you know, he might only be on a small piece of public land for 1 day out of the hunting season, but through your efforts, you have figured out that, like, he's going to be, like, you saw him there one time. But you know that time of year, that's where he's going to be. Like, that's what they're doing. They're rutting. And he's going to, like, go through there. He's going to be there at this certain spot on this day. Or, like, I mean, you can hit a big bull within a 2 or 3 day window in that certain time of the rut. And you figure that out by putting the time in, and then, like, a year later it pays off because you're there. And, like, you literally only have one day out of 365 to kill that bull, and you get it done, and that feels pretty dang good.
That's incredible, man. So. I mean, not only that one day, but that one bull. Like, choosing that bull and trying to learn the behaviors of that bull in the different seasons. So, do you have a time of year? Like, are you doing a lot of your scouting in September after you kill your bull? During that month, and then you're using that for the next years? Are you scouting a lot on the winter range when the bulls come out, finding them and connecting the dots that way? Or is it just all of the above year round? You are looking for a giant bull.
Yeah, it's basically all the above. Yep. And that's, it is really hard to do, but like that was kind of the idea. When we moved out here, you know, it's funny, like when we first started talking about coming out here, it was about 2012, which is right after my football career had ended. And I was trying to, really was searching. I was hunting whitetail in North Dakota, and I wanted to kill like the biggest whitetail, right? So I ended up arrowing a giant whitetail. It was like 189 inch, you know, three main beams. It's crazy. Huge. And in like the October lull too. So it was, you know, super cool, situation, and it was awesome. But like after that, like I really didn't feel, it just wasn't really like, man, it wasn't really doing it for me. As much as I love whitetail hunting, it just wasn't really what I was looking for in terms of a challenge. Not that it's not extremely challenging. It's just, there's different types of challenges. I wanted like more of a physical challenge too. Right. And right around that time, like my brother had told me like, hey, have you heard of this Cam Haynes guy? And I'm like, no, what's the deal? And so, you know, kind of started seeing him and what he was doing. I think at the time, you know, there was some video out about him, you know, killing like, I think it was like 7 or 8 mature bulls in a row was like, how it was framed. And right around the same time as well, I learned about like, there was this company that was getting going called Kuyu, and the guy who was starting it was this guy named Jason Hairston, who he and I had kind of like these similar backgrounds where we'd played football at these smaller schools and had gotten a shot in the NFL and didn't make it. And then he went on to chase this other passion. So I was kind of like starting to like connect these dots, you know, and as my buddy Brock says, success leaves clues, right? So connecting these dots of like, here's what some of these guys are doing. And when I saw guys like, you know, Cam, and like he was, to me, he was really framing like the work piece, giving his passion for bow hunting, a name with the work that he was putting in away from the mountain, right? So he was kind of doing this thing, and I'd never really thought of it like that. And I'm like, when I came out here, like I wanted to do all that stuff, but like in my own mind, I kind of wanted to do it. Like I wanted to try to do it bigger. In a way, like I wanted to do that, but with the biggest bulls I could find, and like try to just do it like at the highest level I could figure out. Because in my mind, like that was the only way to kind of get back to what I was trying to do in football, which was reach the absolute pinnacle. And so for me, that was it. Like that was it. Like I wanted the pinnacle. Like I want to do this thing is at the highest level that you can do it. And to me, like big bulls for you, it's probably mule deer, I would guess, which I haven't really gotten into as much, but I am super interested in, and I know how much of a challenge those things are. But for me, it was big bulls. So I just like, whatever I can do to accomplish that is what I want to do. So to your point, totally was all the above, like all the training, all the scouting, all the research, all the practice, like literally everything that I could possibly do within my control to be successful, I wanted to do. I didn't want to have an excuse if I failed. You know, I wasn't going to have an excuse. Like I wanted to be able to, regardless of the result, win or lose, I know that I put everything I could into it. And that's still my mindset. Even when I'm successful, I'm not too hung up on the success. I'm like, it almost kind of doesn't matter. It's more about the process. Like when I kill a giant bull, like the next day I'm like, let's give it, like, what's the next plan? You know, like you get right back to that process, and that's really kind of what makes me tick, really. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's
same, that's the deal. Man. Yeah. You're speaking my language. It's like, you know, I've lived that ethos for so long, but in the same breath, it's so inspiring what you're doing. Like, to you have put your heart and soul into it, and you've been achieving it. And it isn't by luck, or it isn't a fluke. Like, you've proved it over and over again. And I'm with you. It's like climbing Everest, right? You put your everything, your heart and soul into it, all the training, all the work, and you kill that bull or kill that buck. And I've been better as I get older at enjoying my success. Or it's not that we don't enjoy it, but it's like because you've reached that summit of Everest, it's like, I want to reach it again. I want to do it again. And the work starts tomorrow. Like the day after I killed that big buck or bull, like I got to get back to it. And you can't ever rest on your laurels. None of those big bulls know the previous bulls that you've killed. They don't know the work that you've put in. Like every year you've got to prove it over and over again. And not only find that big bull, but then cross paths with them. And not only cross paths, but then make the right moves to put yourself in range. So like you talk about finding these bulls, which – you know, it's like no surprise to me why you do. You put so much work and effort into it. Like how have you developed, like just your ability to be able to get close to these bulls, to be able to arrow them? Like, man, they're so switched on, and then they have so many cows. So, like, what's your process for stalking these bulls? Are you really patient, waiting for the right time? Are you aggressive on them, and it just comes together on these bulls? And you're a big human. Like, I swear I'm like a half the size of you, you know, which is like I'm able to hide a little bit better and spot and stalk. But it takes years to develop these spot and stalk tactics. So, like, what's your process of getting close once you've found the bull that you want to kill?
Yeah, no, it's – I mean, that's tough. I like to think I'm pretty stealthy for my size class.
Dude, I would say extremely extremely stealthy.
I think a lot of it is I would just – we'll call it instinct, but it was, like, growing up. I mean, I grew up hunting the prairies. Mm-hmm. So, like, not a lot of cover – minimal topography.
Yes.
You had to learn to use what you had. And like, I mean, I shot fingers with no sight until I was like 14. Mm-hmm. I got my first sight at 14, continued to shoot fingers all the way to college. So I took a lot of pride in just my process as an archer, but even as best as I could be, you're talking 30 yards max when I was growing up with the bow. So you had to get close. And like, that's like the art and the beauty of bow hunting. The way I grew up learning how to do it was getting extremely close to wary animals in open country. Mm-hmm. So like I did develop a lot of that, I think, growing up, but then I'm also really fortunate to just have tried to surround myself with successful people and risers and just, you know, people of the same ilk. Right. And I've been fortunate to have some really great mentors. And like one of the first, people I met when I moved out here to Bozeman was Brennan Burns, and he was like smashing giant bulls. Mm-hmm. And we started shooting together, and I just absorbed as much information from him as I could because he was doing it. Mm-hmm. And then was able to meet another guy, Ray Ault, who, you know, broke the world record in the Unlimiteds with his bow on bighorn sheep back in like 1968, won the Ishii Award. Was just, I mean, the dude's a legend. He killed a bighorn sheep in the Spanish Peaks back here, I think in the 80s, with a handgun, sat down and put the pistol between his legs and shot the ram.
God, that's crazy.
Like, just like one of these legendary old hunters. And Ray said to me, one of the most like, this is bow hunting. He's like, there's a time to let it happen and there's a time to make it happen. You know, the successful bow hunters know the difference between the two and when which one is called for. Mm-hmm. And that's something that you have to develop over time, when it's a make it happen, when it's a let it happen. I'm really aggressive. Mm-hmm. All the time. I'm very aggressive in terms of my bow hunting game. But there are times when you have to rein that in and you have to be patient. You have to let things unfold, or you have to just let things happen and learn and have the patience to understand that like tomorrow might present the opportunity. And I think for me, it was just spending that time, you know, spending a ton of time every year hunting them, mm-hmm. learning and making a lot of mistakes,
yep.
blowing a lot of stocks, and, you know, and then going and recapping afterwards, taking after action notes and being extremely detailed about what happened and being honest with yourself about what happened. Like, how did I mess this up? What did I do? And just so learning from your own mistakes and learning from their behavior by spending time with them, eventually you develop a rhythm with them, which I'm sure you're extremely intimate with, that rhythm that you develop, especially like the longer you're out there, mm-hmm. you kind of get in tune with it. And it sounds a little bit like granola to say that, but it's not, like, it's true. Like, you get super in tune with your environment, mm-hmm. And you understand how to manipulate that environment.
Yeah.
And so I would say I'm kind of always default aggressive as a bow hunter, mm-hmm. Patience definitely kills as well. Mm-hmm. So you just kind of have to feel that out as you go.
It's beautiful. Yeah. You couldn't give a better answer. It is, it is developing those instincts. So you had like a great base by chasing mule deer and whitetails in open country, having to get close. Like, you learn what you can get away with and what you can't. You learn what's reckless and what's aggressive. And you know when you're pushing too hard and you bust them out. And it's like, you have to be really honest with yourself too, is when things go wrong, it's really easy to throw out an excuse like, oh, the winds change. But I need to have a higher understanding of the winds. I need to know the directionals and the thermals and how they're moving through. Like, maybe I made my play too quick or too late, or maybe I should have waited for a better wind day to make my play. So it sounds like you're doing all that. And then I also like how you mentioned your failures, like, and your time of field. Like, experience is the best teacher. So, like, the more time we can be out there doing it, like, the more we're going to learn, the better we're going to get. And really learning from those failures, because we're all going to fail. And it's like, oh, like, my default is to be aggressive as well. But there's times where I'm too aggressive and I blow the bull out of country because I push too hard. And it's like, okay, well, now I gotta idle back a little bit on that. Like, okay, mm-hmm. you know, I've got to see when it's my chance and when it's my time, when he goes over a rise, to hustle to that rise and catch him in bow range over the other side. But I need to understand that they have, like, incredible eyesight and pickup movement. So there's times where I'm frozen for a half an hour or 40 minutes where the cows or the bull can see me. Like, you just learn, like, what you can get away with and what you can't, when to push the envelope, when not to, learning from our failures, and then letting experience dictate, and then, like, listening to our gut too. It's like, you can overanalyze the world, but when you see that bull and he's in a spot when you can kill him, you have this inner voice or this inner, it's like, it's now I can kill him, he's in the right spot. And you have to believe in that and not, like, overanalyze or try to be too patient or mm-hmm. like I get caught up, like, when I find a giant, like, part of the problem is not to hunt him like I hunt everything else. Mm-hmm. You know, now all of a sudden, like, you know, I really think you'd love mule deer, like, the extreme country they live in, and there's giants just like there are elk. But they you know, sometimes I'll find this giant buck and I almost sit back and I'm too patient, and I'll watch him for too many days waiting for this perfect scenario, mm-hmm. and I don't play him like I would every other buck. And so then I'm too patient, maybe he moves off, or when I do make a play, mm-hmm. you know, maybe a buck catches me and it's like, I should have done that 3 days ago and then relocated him, had another play, or whatever the case is.
Yeah.
So it's really difficult, but I think, like, your after action notes really help you. That's like huge. You are just all in, man. Like, you are trying to learn as much as you can about hunting giant bulls. Like, man, that's just it's such a great description. So how do you hold it together during your shots? Like, I'm sure you've missed before some giant bulls and have to pick yourself up and get back after it. So what's your process for, like, executing on these animals?
Yeah, again, that just goes back to the work. I mean, I have 100% confidence every time I take a shot because I know the work I've put in.
Yep.
When I'm in the field, when I draw back on a bull, like, I already know it's dead. Like, that's my mindset. And it's not, I don't just make that up in my mind, like, tell myself that for no reason. It's because I shoot my bow a ton and I've practiced every shot and every position. I've worked on my process over and over and over again, you know, how I deploy my rangefinder, how I stow it, how I slide my sight, like, everything that I do. I pay attention to every detail and I work on every detail. And when I'm in the process of a shot, I'm really not even thinking. Like, at that point, I'm just flowing and I'm just operating at like the highest level I can operate at. I mean, I can tell you like the yardages of every bull I've ever shot, but I can't even really tell you like every detail about every shot, because I'm just like, it's almost like I'm kind of blacked out. I'm so locked in and focused in that moment that I'm just operating on 100% training and instinct at that point. Mm-hmm. And like, I've never gotten nervous for a shot. I've never had like target panic on a shot, like buck fever, any of that. It's never happened. And the reason for that is because like I have built such a strong mindset around that part of the game, rooted in the work that I put into it, that like my confidence and belief, like when it comes time to take the shot, is it's just all time. Like there's no doubt in my mind.
It's great though. Like you're going through.
You have
through,
to earn that.
Oh yeah. Yep. Like you say, it isn't make believe. You can't just tell yourself that you're good under pressure or clutch.
Yeah.
Like you have to perform and do that. But that's pretty wild. Like, doesn't surprise me. Like probably a lot of your performing at high levels under intense pressure, like even in football, has like transferred over into your bow hunting. It's really tough for guys to perform at their highest level when shooting at animals. So a lot of guys do, go into that mode where they're not thinking about it, but then they don't let their pin settle. And the difference between a good and a bad shot is a second. But it sounds like you are really letting your pin settle. You're going to execute your shot. That bull is going to die. Like there's no shortcuts. And like you say, it's the work that you put in. But that can be one of the toughest challenges for guys is being able to control their emotions, mm-hmm. perform at their highest level, like under that intense amount of pressure.
But do you think that, and maybe not for all of them, but for some of those guys, like I wonder if it's because they don't test themselves enough, right? Mm-hmm. Like for me, I try to test myself in a lot of different ways year round. For example, like in your training, like do I need to squat 500 pounds to kill a big bull? No, that's probably not necessary. But if I go for like, I'll go for like big training PRs and stuff like that in my training just to test myself and go through the mental process of having to really lock in and send it on something that requires 100% of my focus and intention. Mm-hmm. It's just like taking a shot. It's the same thing. Like it gets me in trouble sometimes. Like last year I blew my hamstring running sprints because I was trying to... The worst thing ever, I had a GPS monitor so I could clock my speed. So I'm running hundreds on the track out in the heat at 37 years old, like a crazy person, just trying to push myself. And I'm hitting 21 miles an hour, and I'm trying to like get another decimal every time, right? She's like, this is becoming a problem. But because I'm trying to force myself into that like fully locked in peak performance mode, because I'm doing that on a regular basis through training and through shooting training, like it's all, I kind of all lump it into training, whether it's physical performance or shooting, all that stuff. Like I'm trying to perform at peak levels regularly in my training regimen. So I think it just comes maybe more natural. I think you hit on, you know, previous athletic career, you're faced with that situation a lot as well. So there's some experience built up there, but I think also just in the training, if guys would put themselves in more sort of do or die situations in their training, mm-hmm. or push themselves like to sort of more max effort situations in their training, I wonder what effect that might have on them in crunch time. You know, would they be able to operate more efficiently in that moment or have more confidence in that moment because they trust themselves to perform when they're called upon?
Mm.
So it makes sense, man. That's a little sports psychology for guys. And that's one thing I love about this. Like I can draw on that athletic background and things I've learned from like so many amazing people that I've trained with and played with that are, you know so much more than I do about that stuff, that I've been able to learn little things and then take that and apply that into other areas like bow hunting. Mm-hmm. I think that's like one of the super cool things that you can do as a bow hunter.
Yeah, it's why you're performing at such a high level. It's amazing. I think you're right. I think it is such a great sports psychology tip for guys. It's like, man, it is so tough. And I think we do have to mess up a time or two to really learn to be able to focus in. Like, I think you're a bit of an anomaly to figure it out so quick, so soon on such giant animals to wrap that in. I do think it's because of your training. I think it's because of your background. I think it's your mental preparation going into the season. Like, I do think it's all that. And I think anybody can do that if they set their mind to it, like you're saying.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do think like it takes a few of messing up and losing your mind and go, gosh, I didn't go through my process. I didn't execute like I was supposed to. And so it is a lot in the training, like trying to put yourself in those uncomfortable situations. So I know with my shooting, it's shooting in front of guys. It's shooting with buddies. It's, you know, shooting an odd tournament or a 3D here or there where you really want to shoot good. And then it's like I get my bow really dialed in where I have a ton of confidence and I shoot all the time. But then it's more so my training turns to hunting situations, shooting from my knees more than my feet because that's where a lot of my shots come from. It's yep. shooting on after a sprint down and a sprint back or mm-hmm. after, like, I do my shooting while I'm doing pull-ups and push-ups while my arms are fatigued, mm-hmm. my hold isn't there, you know, but I can still execute and still put that arrow in the middle. Like, all that training goes in. And then, you know, for me, it's like trigger time. All the bow hunting I get to do, mm-hmm. the Hawaii, the international, the mule deer, the That's antelope, huge. The elk, like pretty soon, like I've just built where I can shoot my best at animals. Like yeah. it isn't just on targets. Like I've proven it.
That's
I can
compounding interest. Like yeah. those hunts.
Yeah.
It's not just like one and then another and another. They stack and they add up yeah. and like continue to make you better. There's totally. Like no doubt about that.
Yep. And yep. then it comes like once you start to build that confidence, you said it too, is the details. Mm-hmm. Like range finding is an art too. Like yeah. especially like over top the grass and like you know, I think a mule deer antelope where you just don't want to poke your head over the grass too far, but you want to get a good range. Like you know, and nowadays the devil's in the details. Guys don't practice much with their range finding, but range finding is as much of an art as anything we do.
I mean, how many people I wonder go out and like you get into the moment of truth and then you realize you have to dig your range finder out, range them, actually range the target, put it back and then draw your bow. Totally. Like how much time is that going to take somebody who hasn't worked on it?
Totally.
Like I have a drill that I do. Like I have a specific drill I do. It's a spot and stock range drill. It's progressive drill. You start out at, you have to pick a yardage based on your ability, but I usually start out, you know, a little further, 70, 80, somewhere out like that. My first shot standing, but I range the target, boom, put it back, slide my sight, draw back, shoot. Immediately after I release the shot, I begin stalking closer. I usually go about 10 yards and on the stalk, I'm crouch stalking, knocking another arrow, finding my range finder. When I stop, I go down to two knees. So I'm on my knees. Boom, range the target again, acquire the range, put the range finder back, slide the sight, draw back, shoot, get up off my knees, and then I go about another 10 yards closer on the way, knocking another arrow, grabbing my range finder again. And then on that one, I just stay in a really crouched, like squat position, like you a lot of times you do yeah. just to get a little topography to hide you. I peek up, I range the target, I go back down, I put the range finder back, draw my bow from the squat position, stand up, shoot it. And that's the drill. Mm-hmm. And I told you, I just got on social media. I actually put that on my social media that people can go watch the drill and go do it. It'll, mm-hmm. it'll absolutely make you better, but you have to range, put it back three times every rep or every set. You have to slide your sight, knock the arrow, get your release on the string. Like you have to do all the things. Like it is exactly what happens when you're hunting. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just, you know, paying attention to the details, going through those realistic scenarios, so that you're more prepared and you're more confident. That's why, like, when I go out there and I'm hunting and it comes down to that opportunity, like, I don't even have to think. Like, I've done this a million times, mm-hmm. you know, so it's just execute it that
oh,
way.
Oh, I love that drill, yeah. man. That's yeah. I got to incorporate that into my
– Yeah, you'll like it.
Yeah, into my routine. Man, that's incredible. So, yeah, social media, like you've been a ghost for, like, all these bowls. Like, you haven't had any social media. So yeah. – and I'm really fortunate to get you on the podcast, to have a conversation, to get to meet you.
I'm
and then
to
also
be here,
like, yeah, you're brand new to social media, like a couple weeks in. So what a great follow. Like we all have to find your social media and follow you. Where's it at?
You can just look me up on Instagram, just Sean Mellon. So
okay, cool.
Apparently there's not a whole lot of those on the internet. So it's the name is actually Sean.Mellon, but I think if you just type my name in, you'll find me.
Sweet, man. So, yeah. I can't wait to start following your social media and pick up on some of these drills and tips that you're putting out. So yeah, cool. You're going to build a following quick for sure. So you like it so far, huh?
It's been good just connecting with a bunch of people that I wouldn't have otherwise connected with. Mm-hmm. And we talked kind of before the podcast that, you know, I think there's a lot of stuff that I feel like it's good to share. A lot of these things that, you know, my mindset, my process, and a lot of the things that I do that have helped me achieve what I have so far and that what I want to continue to achieve. I think just that process, there's a lot of people interested in what that's like. And I personally am interested in helping people. So I think that's basically going to be the lane, is just kind of open up the door a little bit to folks and let them see kind of part of the process. And hopefully they can pick something up, or if nothing less, just enjoy some, you know, videos of big bulls and stuff.
Yeah. Me included. I can't wait, dude. Yeah, it's great. To just connect with the community. But yeah, like, you've done this, you've just been so focused on killing big bulls that all your effort has gone there. And it's not, it's not the praise, or you don't need anybody to tell you good job. It's all like in the purest form, like you do it because of the love of the game, you know, and that's in the love of the process, you know, like you are so caught up in the process of preparing and finding these bulls and then killing them. Man, that's the purest form. Like, that's why we we all should be doing it, you know. I think if they're motivated by the wrong reasons, they never reach the level to where you're at. Like, you have to find your love for true bow hunting, and it isn't the praise or the good job or respect from the community. It's for that love of the game and the love of bow hunting, man. There's nothing like it.
No, and I'll say too, like, not being on social media was pretty intentional. A lot of the negative aspects of it, but I just didn't want any distractions. And also I just kind of felt like I really didn't done anything worthy of sharing, part of my mindset. I really just didn't want anything to do with it and wanted to just focus on my craft. And, I wanted to, you know, just really build something within myself, build myself into the person capable of doing all the things I wanted to do and accomplish some things. And, the crazy thing is, without any social media, the network of extremely high performing people that I've developed through bow hunting is insane. That I would have never guessed that would happen with no social media, like literally just by training really hard and killing giant bulls. Like, I've met some of the coolest freaking people in the world. I mean, it's why I'm sitting here with you right now, like with no social media, like all that happened, like have met and become friends with some extremely incredible human beings that are just, you kind of gravitate towards each other out of this common bond of high performance or high achievement, or just really being passionate about doing something that is hard to do. It's amazing if you put the work into something like that and start, you know, start doing those things, who you'll run into and who you kind of end up clicking with. And there, I don't know, it's just, there's a magnetism between high performers and risers that it never ceases to amaze me how those people just become connected. And so, like, in this social media world where I feel like there's a lot of people probably out there who are trying to build these networks and connect with all these people, but they really haven't put the time in with themselves to build something that really attracts people and wants, you know, makes the connections want to happen and really kind of give them what they're looking for. Like, kind of turn that inward and focus less on what you're trying to show everybody you are, and just focus more on doing the thing and building the value within yourself. And it's pretty amazing on, you know, who you can meet and where it can take you.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. I love it. Focused on honing your craft and in building somebody that you're proud of and accomplishing what you set out to accomplish without any distractions, and really turning inward. So I'd imagine, like, your inner voice has got to be pretty motivated, like almost mean at times, I would think, right? Like, mine is as well. It's like you need that inner voice that pushes you, and I heard this. I'm so bad at like screwing up quotes that the guys that listen to the podcast will definitely laugh at me. But there's this quote that I just saw the other day that like it's about high performers or people that want to be high performers are like work a little bit and think they should achieve the world. And real high performers think they aren't working hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like I am so tough on myself that it's like, you know, I go out and do a 10-mile run and it's like, God, I really should have fit in 13 or 14 today. I had more time on my hands or mm-hmm. like, you know, and it is like we have to fit in family and work and our workouts. And there is a limit, right? Like if you like, I can't push all night long and never sleep. Like there mm-hmm. is a limit, but I just find myself that I'm always pushing harder. It's like, you know, if I miss a run, I'm really tough on myself and want to make up for it the next day. Or if I miss my lifting, like I'm a consistency guy. Yeah. I love the consistency of just day in, day out of putting in the work. And so, you know, I can be tough on myself, but I also think that's necessary to be a high performer.
Yeah. Do you think you're like your inner voice, do you think it's more positive or more not negative, but like, is it more, you know, hey, you need to toughen up and do this, or is it more like positive?
Yeah, you need to toughen up, and
because I know there's both.
Yeah.
We all have both going on. Like some people are more one or the other.
Oh, I never give myself praise. I never celebrate my successes, or at least I didn't used to. It was always tough on myself. It was always like, you know, I just don't allow myself to be lazy. Or when I talk to myself, sometimes, you know, it can be a bit mean spirited. But I don't even think mean spirited. It's just motivational. It's like, man, you've got to get out there today. And you know, there's like a lot of hours in the day, and I just don't allow myself to be lazy or let myself waste them, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think I'm a bit tougher on myself. What would you say for yourself?
I would say earlier on in life, it was a lot of negative. It was a lot of just proving people wrong and proving myself, kind of a lot of just like really like, you know, screw the world type of mentality. Like mm-hmm. you're going to, like, I really wanted to prove something. And I still have a lot of that. Like actually today, before I came here, I did like 2000 meters of X runs out on the soccer field. Cause I'd already shot and got my workout in, but then I was going to come talk to you and I knew we were going to talk about like working hard and all this stuff. And I'm like, I just, it would feel like I'd earned it today. Like I needed more. I text my wife. I'm like, I'm going to the field. I gotta, like, I need it. And she's just like laughing at me because she knows like that's how I am. So I went and did like 2,000 meters of sprints before I came here because I just felt like my inner voice was like, you haven't done shit, you know?
Yeah.
So, and I think that's great to have. You have to manage that though. You can't get too hard on yourself. You have to be grateful for each day and understand it's a gift and try to make the most of it.
Yeah. That's really well put. Like, you're exactly right. Like, as I get older, I've built this self-confidence in myself and that I'm proud of myself at what I have achieved and what I have become and the way that I operate in life and business and bow hunting. Like, I've been able to earn that self-confidence, and it's mm-hmm. not in arrogance, but I do believe in myself and believe I can achieve anything. And mm-hmm. I'm proud of the person that I've become. I still need that motivational voice. And like your sprints today, I'm the same. So I went out to go do Cam's podcast and go train with him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I just couldn't sit still in the morning. So, you know, I went out and ran 6 miles before we went and did a marathon on his training. Yeah, totally. I was just the same way.
Yeah,
I just
you got
can't.
A problem.
Yeah, totally. The same problem. But I do think it needs to be managed, and you don't want to be so negative to yourself where you are so hard on yourself, because I don't think that's good as well. But it's like growing as a person, right? Again, that sports psychology, or it's the brain is the biggest supercomputer we'll ever have, and it's just trying to program that thing right, and then to enjoy life and be happy in life too. And I'm happiest when I'm working towards my goals and working hard. So I like keep after it. You sound like you're that same way.
No, that's it. That's it right there. That whole process of working towards something is really kind of what it is. So,
you've already got some bulls found here for next year. You're looking forward to it. You're probably in for the draws, and then you've got some backup bulls as well. This is like, for you, it's life. So do you remember some of the big bulls that you found that you may go back for 2 years down the road or 3 years down the road?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, all of them. I have them all cataloged. Yeah. I have videos and pictures and, I mean, dates, times, locations, everything. Mm-hmm. Like, they're all cataloged. Mm-hmm. So, and that's paid off for me many times where, you know, I think people get impatient sometimes. They think, you know, people ask me a lot, like, how do you find a bull and then kill him? And, like, I've done that a few times where, like, I found a bull and then killed him that year. But a lot of times it's like a couple years down the road where like I saw a bull one time hunting and then 3 years later I killed him. Mm. So it's like, you know, building that history with him through your time spent again doing it. And then eventually, like, the more you do it and as much time as I've spent doing it, like, there's way more bulls than I'll ever hunt that I have cataloged, but that's like, I guess, a good problem to have.
It's a good problem, know? Man. It just means there's still opportunity out there. And so these big bulls, they get pretty crafty and pretty smart. They don't get killed then, even during the rifle seasons. Yeah. And like, you
that's
find
why they're
that,
big.
Yeah, these big bulls that you find, they continue to live on and don't get killed the majority of the time. By the way,
I mean, sometimes they do. Like, it's always tragic when I see, like, the bulls that I'm after, like, usually when they get killed, I find out because they're huge. So like, they circle around through the text messages and wherever else. But I mean, usually you see them maybe on the cover of a magazine or something and you're like, oh, I guess that one's dead. You do. You just, I don't know, man. You just keep tabs on them and it kind of builds over the years. And every year you kind of have a one or two that you would really like to go get. And certainly have one of those for this year. And I'm also looking forward to finding more, you know, like I've learned that lesson the hard way too, where like I found a giant and I'm like, all right, I'm going to kill that one and kind of backed off the gas pedal a little bit. And then something happens where like the hunt for him is not ideal. It's not going to work out. And you haven't really put enough time into finding a backup or enough backups. So I've kind of learned that the hard way a few times to where I just find as many big ones as I can and just catalog as much as I can. And then kind of just develop my process from there.
Oh, that's incredible, man. So how many inches will a bull put on a year? Are you also trying to age these bulls as you see them? Do you know when they're kind of topped out or when they have a lot of potential?
Yeah, so it is kind of tough to age them sometimes, especially like I think, you know, from herd to herd and from area to area, like I cover a lot of ground too. So like there could be, I mean, it's almost like a totally different subspecies within the same state, depending on where you're at.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to do with that. Generally, all the bulls I'm hunting are really old. You know, I generally don't find out exactly how old they are, you know, until after I kill them. But usually I have a pretty good idea of, you know, the ones that I'm hunting are, you know, kind of that 10 plus, like old bulls.
Yeah.
And it's hard to gauge whether or not how much they grow from year to year. I've seen them go up and down and then back up again.
Oh, wow.
I've seen them go down. I mean, seen them blow up. The biggest one I ever saw blow up was, a really big non-typical bull that I was hunting that was, I thought he was in like the 380s. And then the following year he was like close to 430. Just,
oh my God. Absolutely. Oh my God. Yeah. 50 inches. That's crazy.
But he was like a freak anyway. Yeah. So you like, you just knew that he had that in him, that it could happen. And when I saw him on the hoof hard horned, like he was a giant. I don't know that anyone ever ended up killing him.
No, you didn't kill him, huh?
No, I never killed him. I never saw him get killed.
So you don't kill every bull you find, right?
Certainly not.
They get the better of you, right?
And that's one thing to touch on too. Like we've touched on a lot of the successes. Like there's a ton of them that I haven't got. Like there's a ton of them that I've definitely blown opportunities. Like there is a lot of failure, a lot in there. And kind of like I mentioned earlier, I just try not to emotionally attach myself to either the failure or the success. Just more focus on the process of what I'm doing and trying to kind of execute on that process at the highest level that I can. And do everything that I need to do every single day to build the momentum to make it count when the opportunity comes.
Man, that's the same with me, man. It's like for every big buck that I killed, there's like two that have got away. And there's some ones out there that are just mind blowers that are 40 inches wide or that go into this range or in this caliber that I'm not even sure what he scores into that 230 to 250 range that I find and get to hunt. Yeah. Can't get them killed and just got the better of me. You know, it's like for every one that I've killed, there's at least a couple that get away. And so failure's like part of this game, right? They're really tough to kill.
Those ones are like, they almost do more for you than the ones you get. Like those ones that you're thinking about, like how motivating are they? Like mm-hmm. I think it was 2020 when I ate my tag, and like that year I went like hard commitment 400 or nothing. Like I'm going to break 400 or not kill a bull. And it was like October 3rd and I had hunted nearly every day. I think I took like a couple days off. So it was early October and I had, you know, whatever, around 30 days in already. And I finally got on a bull that I thought was over 400. And Brian, dude, like when I tell you that, like I put myself in the most perfect situation that you could possibly put yourself in to be successful. He broke away from his, he was rutting hard. They were kind of hitting that second wind early October rut where they really just go crazy. This bull had gotten a big group of cows with several other bulls, and they kind of, you know how they just kind of start escalating off each other when it really starts ramping up. Yeah. And it was that kind of a day. And I was like exhausted mentally and physically, like totally exhausted, been putting in like 20 plus miles in a day and, you know, almost, you know, a month into season. It, you know how you get in that time of season, but still really committed to what I was doing. Anyway, he had broken away from the herd, went off, and he was kind of on this tabletop plateau that had like a knife, kind of just a knife, like a piece of pie cut out of it with this little spring drainage that came down. And he went into that, which allowed me a perfect opportunity to get in the drainage with him with my thermals coming down the spring creek right in my face and work up to him. And I got around kind of to where I was probably within 100 yards, couldn't see him, but working around some topography to get close. Everything's perfect. I know that he's the only elk in this little drainage with me. The thermals are rushing down in my face, and I can hear him just absolutely, you know, just going crazy on this brush raking. And you know how when they get like that, like you can walk up and stick the arrow in their chest. So I'm like, it's perfect. So I get into position. I come within about 52 yards, and I peek over the hill, and I'm above him, so he's below me in the bottom of the drainage at this point. He's still just beating the tar out of this brush, but he's like facing me, below me. So there's like my shot would be like at the top of his spine. So there was no, it was almost like being in a tree stand, and he's right underneath me facing me. So I'm like, I just had to wait. And I knew that he was eventually going to stop and go back to his cows. And there was kind of like a little trail going up the side of the drainage. I figured he would just walk up that back to his cows. So I ranged that trail and I picked out a couple yardages. And like there's one spot was like 52. He got done. He kind of turned around. So he went from facing right at me, no shot, to just facing straight away from me, no shot. Starts working up the drainage, hits the trail and turns broadside. And I was at full draw and had already ranged that spot that he was in. And I just let it go on the walk at 54 or 52 yards. And just that one little detail of not, you know, I mean, I could have just, you know, and stopped him. Mm-hmm. And I mean, to this day haunts me. Just that little bit of mental fatigue, was enough to just not think it all the way through. And I just kind of moved with him and the shot broke. It was perfectly behind his front shoulder when the shot broke, and the arrow hit him in the back hip, and it went in like 3 inches, like solid bone, no arteries, nothing. He like shook it off, went and rounded up some cows, and they took off. And he was completely fine, and I mean, I totally blew it. And that one little tiny detail, I mean, if to this day, like I can't tell you how many days I think about it where I'm like, if I'd have just made one little squeak, he would have stopped and looked at me and that bull would be on my wall. Mm-hmm. Instead, I lost him. Mm-hmm. But how valuable that failure was for me. So never waste a failure.
Nope. Always learn from. The best ones are the ones that you learn from. The reason why you learn from them is because they hurt so bad. They cut so deep. Like, still to this day, you think about that shot. Like, those ones, like, you learn and become better for it. And yeah. will kill bulls and giant bulls because of it, you know. But, man, I mean, I'm with you. Like, we've all made mistakes in that crunch. I think I missed the world record mule deer. Like, at the time, the world record was 205 typical, and this one was around 210. Mm. And I actually am going back to this unit this year. So, well, I should if I draw it, but it was in Colorado. And dude, I like, I spotted this buck, and, he's just such a, he just had it all, you know? And so they go and they bed in these sparse little trees down and through there. And I'm trying to figure out if I can get down the avalanche chute or not. And just about that time I see this doe and this fawn like poke out the top end. And I'm like, oh, well, they came up it. Like, I can surely get down it. Well, that doe and fawn did not come up that avalanche chute. Like, I had to strap my bow to my pack and climb down, like free climb down, like free solo, like a glacier. In the middle of it, I get down, wind's perfect, and I get right into into these jack trees where he's bedded, and I can't see him, but I know he's right there, you know. And so I set up, and it's like, okay, well, I think he's gonna come this way or down below me. And so I like range the tree down below me and start ranging stuff and just sit there on my knees. And 30 minutes go by, 40 minutes go by, and he stands up, and there he is, you know. He's coming out, no idea I'm there. He's just feeding out on the grasses. And, you know, I'd range the tree at, like, 52 at the tree or whatever. And at that tree at 52, he, like, walked behind the tree, right, and stopped right after the tree. So when he goes behind the tree, I draw back, and it's 52, and my pin's dialed and set, execute, pull, and shot. Well, he must have been like just a few yards behind the tree. And I mean, I could have ate a sandwich and range find that buck and killed him. Like, I had all the time in the world, and I like rushed it for no reason.
Yeah.
And my arrow just settled low right underneath his belly. And I, you know, I don't have a lot of range forgiveness at a 26 and a half inch draw, but I must have been wrong by 3 yards,
yeah,
you know, something like that, and missed him and like never got a chance, never found that buck again. And like, it hurt so bad. And that was like
so tough.
A bit younger in my career when I just didn't have it all put together like I feel like I do now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's crucial for my development and my learning. And, you know, I did end up arrowing a buck on that hunt that is like one of my greatest achievements. So you like saw one out there in the garage, and that's like, you know, I missed that buck. It was crushing. I really thought he was the world record. Continued to look for him. I was like backpacked way in. I was actually out of food, and like, you know, I have one more day, and I'm just pushing it out the ridge lines and spot a buck bedded, and like made a great shot, like off a cliff, like just a classic mule deer high country shot, and able to put a perfect arrow in that buck. You know, a bit of redemption. He wasn't quite like the buck I missed, but yeah, that's what like drives you and makes you better. It's like you make those mistakes and they happen, but I won't make it again, you know?
Yeah, man. I mean, those failures are pretty dang important. They're tough. They're tough, but I mean, they help you build yourself into the person who's going to be capable of executing the next time around.
Yep.
And also just like, it's almost like there's almost a beauty of it, the way it works like that sometimes. Like, there's always going to be that one out there that, whether it's in your mind or maybe you've actually seen him or caught a glimpse of him, or maybe you've had an opportunity at him but you didn't get him. Like, in your mind, like, we always imagine that one like giant out there that like we're going to hunt someday. Like, you kind of just have that vision of him, and whether he's real or not, kind of keeps you going. Mm-hmm. Just that thought of him being out there is kind of, it's something that we take with us every day when we get to work.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's kind of a, I think there's kind of a beauty to that.
There is, man. It's like the bucks of our dreams and the bulls of our dreams, they still exist and they are out there.
They
and
are.
It's just amount it's just about putting in the work to go achieve it and go find them. But they are out there. They do exist. Yep. And so it's like stepping up our game each and every year. Like it's also not being satisfied. Like, I feel like I'm always trying to push my level to a higher level. Like, even picking up these tips from you, like your shooting and like that, the three stage from your knees and execute, like that'll make me better. But I'm always looking, you know, once you get to a high level of bow hunting, you know, at that point, it's just looking for those little edges or those little bits of improvement. So it sounds like you running the getting your two a day today, it sounds like you're always trying to get better.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the name of the game right there, right? Yeah. Just find ways to improve always. I think that's like every single day you have that opportunity to kind of sharpen that edge. So, and it's not just for bow hunting. I mean, like I train really hard. I'm just as obsessed with like the mindset and the human performance side of it as the carryover that it has to bow hunting. Mm-hmm. Right. So it's just all of it is just an excuse to have something to work towards and get better. Like that's what we really are craving. The struggle towards the heights is truly what fills us, right? Like that's what we're after. Mm-hmm. The reaching of the heights, the accomplishment, like when you get to the top of the mountain right back here, what do you see? Like the rest of the mountain range and all the other mountaintops. Mm-hmm. Okay. Like that's what it is. When you get there and you accomplish that thing and you realize like, it's really just about going back down the other side, going back down to the darkness and to the scary place where all the, you know, the scary things live and where all the work is and getting back to that process and then working your way back up the next one.
So true, man. Yeah. It's like, I think of that, like when I was younger, the goal is always to kill a giant buck and it is fulfilling and it is fun, but pretty soon you start to learn that the enjoyment's really in the journey. You know, it's like the enjoyment is in the process, like you talk about, in the journey and being just immersed in something and passionate about it. And so, yeah, I think of it too. It's like I'm just really fortunate that I get to go chase these things and have wild adventures and push myself to my limits and train really hard and just be excited about life. Like, you know, that's really what it's all about, I think.
It is. It's awesome. We're fortunate to be able to have that and to live in a place and in a country that we can do that. I mean, we have the freedoms to do that. And, you know, if you have a healthy body and healthy mind and you can go chase these things that you want to chase, I mean, we're extremely fortunate. So that's part of that positive motivation there too is don't be, you know, don't forget to be grateful for those things as well and let that motivate you as well.
100%, man. Well, I'm so impressed. I'm like so glad I got to sit down with you and do the podcast. Like it inspires me to push to a new level. And I'm really impressed at what you've achieved and the bulls that you've killed. But I just can't wait to see what the future holds for you. Like, man, there's more to it. I can't wait to see what you turn up this season. So I can't wait to follow social media. Everybody should go and follow it. And man, I just can't thank you enough for like driving all the way down, meeting me, jumping on the podcast, and then sharing this information that's going to make guys better. But man, that's amazing.
No, I appreciate you having me on here. It's awesome meeting you. And like, it's my pleasure to come over here and hang out and talk bow hunting and training. Like what, I mean, it's pretty easy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, no, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Oh man, we got to do it again.
Yeah.
All right, Sean. Well, really nice meeting you. Thanks again, man.
Okay. Thanks, Brian.
Okay.
All right, guys. Great podcast with Sean. I really enjoyed that. Really enjoyed getting to meet him, getting to know him a bit. Just a heck of an elk hunter. And I feel really inspired, like after that podcast, that, you know, that there's great opportunities out there and just need to put in the work to create them. So definitely going to step up my scouting game throughout the year, definitely in the summertime. We found out right after the podcast about our Montana special elk tags, drew a special elk tag as well as Sean. I believe he drew the tag he was after. So, yeah, we'll both be scouting hard and going hard for elk, and I definitely want to be able to try to harvest some of those big next-level bulls. Like, I've had great elk success, but, man, that's next level. So, great podcast. Thanks to Sean for taking the time, running down to the house here and recording that. I really enjoyed it. Hope you guys did too. And, man, yeah, thanks to our sponsors on today's show. Thank Eberly Stock, Cryptech, and OnX Black Ovis. And thanks to Eastman's for everything they do. Man, I'm just starting on my bear season. Had a full send the other day. I backpacked into a spot. It's one of my early spots. Saw sow and a couple cubs. And then saw a giant jet black. Like, he just had everything I was looking for. Big melon head, big body. He's out eating grasses in a little pocket park. And God, he was just so far away. He was like across the canyon, so had to lose a couple thousand, gain a couple thousand. I'd already backpacked into this spot. And then, you know, it was going to take me, like I estimated, about 3 hours to get there. I actually cut that time down. It took me 2 hours and 45 minutes. So it's just like give myself a chance at that bear. Like I could have sat on the vantage point. I was going to camp there that night and like wait for a closer one. But it's like that's the bear I really want to kill. And I know that he probably won't be there when I get there. But the deal is it's such an isolated meadow that I feel like he's living in there. So, you know, it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. If I make it over there, I have like an hour, hour and a half of daylight, and maybe he'll come back out. And so it was pretty gnarly go. It was like cross the canyon and then made the climb. And the way I had to come with my wind, I was in this chute, and man, I was just like, it was so steep and gnarly, like climbing in those cliffs and in those rocks. Able to keep myself safe, get up there with the good wind, and the bear no-showed, and couldn't catch him up in there. And it's such a tough spot to hunt because I have to backpack on the opposite side of the canyon in for 3 or 4 hours, and then it takes me 3 hours to get to the where the bear is, where he comes out in the park. So I think that bear's got the better of me. I'm going to grab a couple more vantage points and look around for him, but really exciting. And, you know, just proud of my effort to give myself a chance to try to kill him. And I knew he probably wouldn't be in the same meadow, but I figured maybe he'll just go on the edge and take a nap and come back out for evening, but wasn't the case. But really fun to have my bow with me and go on a full send on a bear. So season has started, and yeah, I've got to work during the week and things, but I'm definitely going to be out some evenings and then weekends and try to backpack into some spots and have some great adventures and see if I can't catch up to one of these things. So super fun. But anyways, that's what I'm up to. So with that, check in with you guys next week.